Welcome to XXL's Inside Track, a podcast that shines a spotlight on some of hip-hop's most influential industry executives, entrepreneurs, and more. I'm Vanessa Satin, editor-in-chief of XXL. Join me and my esteemed co-host, music executive Courtney Lowry, as we hold in-depth conversations with the legendary figures that run the hip-hop community. We'll discuss their journey and daily grind, their contribution to the culture, the intricacies of their jobs, plus the ins and outs of the music genre that unites us all. This is XXL's Inside Track. Welcome to XXL's Inside Track podcast. I'm Vanessa Satin, editor-in-chief of XXL, with Courtney, who is an industry exec and good friend, and Chris Atlas from Fat Beats, president of Fat Beats, that's sitting with us today.
Thanks for having me. Like, Thank you for coming. You know, you both are friends.
Absolutely.
So I feel very comfortable sitting with both of you.
So. All right, so you better talk some shit. No, I'm just kidding.
You might get a little out of this.
No, but
you're a pioneer, you're a pillar in the game. Tell us how you
Thank
got
you.
In.
Oh, man. I started as an intern at Tommy Boy Records in 1995.
Wow.
I was a student at City College, NYC. I'm originally from City College. I'm originally from the Bronx, New York.
Okay. And,
you know, Tommy Boy was, while I've had other internships prior, that was the one that really kind of set me on the course, you know, working with Monica Lynch and Tom Silverman and working on acts like De La Soul, Naughty by Nature.
During that time, in what capacity?
I started doing college radio promotion.
Okay.
And then from there, I went to rap promotion while I was at Tommy Boy. I also had my own imprint label, which was called Tommy Boy Black Label, where I put out a number of underground hip-hop acts. Because, you know, Tommy Boy at that time was huge. It was a very successful label. And this was like, I'd say probably 98, 99.
So who were some of the big acts on Tommy Boy during that time?
Just to during that time, I mean, De La Soul, House of Pain, Coolio, Queen Latifah, Naughty by Nature. Just an incredible, you know. Tommy Boy was, I think, one of the founding labels. You know, you had Tommy Boy, you had Profile, you had Def Jam. Those were like the pillars, you know, in hip hop. So Tommy Boy really kind of set me on the path, which just been nonstop since.
What happened to Tommy Boy? I mean, I remember coming in and how prevalent it was.
Yeah, I mean, around the early 2000s, you know, it kind of got to that point where it was a part of Warner Music Group, and, you know, sales had dipped, the business had dipped, and, you know, it was eventually completely acquired via Warner Music Group, you know? So the label, I think, just kind of shut down for a brief period, 2001, 2002. And like most labels, you know, particularly of that nature, you know, you kind of go through a dormant period, but they revitalized and, you know, new owners, and Tommy Boy is actually up and running now through Reservoir.
Wow.
You know, so.
So did you make it to the end or did you jump ship before then?
I left in 2000. Yeah, like towards the middle of 2000. And at that time, I actually started working at Cornerstone Promotion, which, you know, Cornerstone, legendary marketing agency, the parent company for the Fader.
Absolutely.
Huge shout out to John Cohen, but also I got to say RIP to Rob Stone.
That's right.
Who, you know, was my brother and, you know, a friend, a mentor, and just a tremendous advocate for music and culture. So, I went to Cornerstone around that time, towards the late 2000, going into 2001.
And I remember that time. Cornerstone was a big agency. They were one of the first to kind of start infusing hip hop into culture.
Yep.
You know,
so brand marketing.
100%. Yep. Can you take us through some of that?
Yeah, I mean, listen. At that time, to me, Cornerstone was the premier agency to actually bridge that gap between music, brand marketing.
Correct.
We had clients such as Xbox, Boost Mobile, Sprite.
Yep.
And a big catalyst for Cornerstone was actually pairing DJs, pairing artists with brands.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so some of the programs that we had relative to Boost Mobile, which was a program called Rock Corps, which was about community service and actually getting kids in the community to actually give back and get tickets to shows and see artists. with Sprite, there was the Sprite remix, which I don't know if you guys remember.
I remember that.
The remix was just like a variant, if you will, of the Sprite flavor. Mm-hmm. And we actually had DJs remixing vinyl. And it was that was a huge campaign.
Yeah.
Xbox. But again, just ultimately, you know, bridging DJs, artists with branding, brand marketing. Cornerstone Mixtape, of course, legendary mixtape series, was also a big catalyst for that.
And from there, because you're also known as a marketing guru. So is that where the marketing kind of hat came from?
Yeah, because when I was at Tommy Boy, the bulk of my career there was in promotion, college radio, A&R.
Right.
And then when I went to Cornerstone, that's when I was still doing promo, but I started to morph into the marketing side.
There we go.
Based on the clients that we had, the corporate clients, label clients, and you know that really kind of made me pivot and go more into marketing, and you know kind of remain in marketing since that point.
True.
Yeah.
And then, because you ended up back at a label.
Yeah, I ended up back at a label. After Cornerstone, you know, I dabbled a little bit in a few other things, right? While I, you know, Ant Mobile, which nobody remembers Ant Mobile, but Ant Mobile, which was like an offshoot of Boost Mobile. Mm-hmm. I went there for a brief stint. And then, but ultimately, after Cornerstone, I went to Def Jam.
Right. You're the Def Jam guy for a long time.
Yeah, I was at Def Jam for close to 10 years.
Okay.
And
prime years
too, but I always feel like at Def Jam, in the role and position I had, especially given the prime years of Def Jam, I think I held that position the longest, given that, you know, I was head of marketing. You know, I started at Def Jam as SVP of marketing, then I went to EVP of marketing, and that was just like an incredible period, given where, you know, you had L.A. Reid, Steve Bartles, like just the artists.
I was going to say, can you take us through some of the artists during that time? So we can.
Yeah, I mean, okay, Kanye, The Dream.
Marketing with Kanye.
Ludacris, Rick Ross, Jeezy, Rihanna.
Left and right.
Justin Bieber, Jadakiss, Jeremiah, and then, you know, there was the new era, which was Logic and Alessia Cara, and I think Alessia and Logic were the last couple projects that I worked. That's not true. Earl Sweatshirt. I mean, it's so many, you know? Incredible artists, incredible time, you know, when the business was the business, as we say.
So the lure of the stories were always, you know, I'm working in media, so not over there as much, but that it was just always rappers hanging around all the Def Jam, and you never knew you would walk up into, and it was just this cool spot when you went up there, and then people would go to visit and be like, who did you see while you were there? And all, what was the, I mean, that was heyday prime label, hip-hop label world, everything. What was the environment like up there? Because it's clearly not what anything's like today.
No, I mean, the energy was definitely electric. You felt it. You definitely, you know, had artists coming through. You had artists feeling comfortable coming by. You had artists collaborating, you know, in a natural way, not I'm going to send you this, send it back, you know, which is some of what happens nowadays.
And even not at that prime time wasn't just so email-based, you know, and phone-based. Yeah, I mean, you're dealing with each other in person. You're going to an office 5 days a week.
Yeah.
It's all of that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, just the team. You have an amazing team of people and executives that carried that, you know what I mean? That also lived that lifestyle, whether it's from, you know, a Sean Pecos or a Rodney Sheely, Vet Davila. Like, there's so many, Gabby Peluso, there's so many executives within that Def Jam era, you know, that really lived it, you know what I mean? Carried it, and, you know, just kind of fought tooth and nail for the artist, you know?
To be, you be political as you want here, what Def Jam is now versus Def Jam is then, what's your opinion on it? And how, you know, I mean, tremendously we've seen things change.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think Def Jam now is a reflection of where the culture is. Where
good answer.
We're in we're in a tech digital era, mm-hmm. right? And there's less, to me, artist development, you know, conversations, which I kind of feel like it's going to get back to that because of where the business is. And I think that it's a very different Def Jam than the Def Jam that I was at.
But is it, I think it's also bigger than just a, you know, a Def Jam situation. It also goes back to, you were talking about just the label culture and how that doesn't kind of exist anymore. Artists coming up, talking about, you know, just having the camaraderie, you know, talking about collaborating.
Yeah.
You don't really see that. And it's not necessarily a Def Jam thing throughout any of the labels.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
do you think that has, that's taken place and that has an effect overall on all labels?
Absolutely.
In the climate of the culture, which you were saying?
I think that that's had a tremendous impact on the climate, right? Because, you know, we had this period, and whether it's coming out of COVID or during COVID, where so much of it was based on TikTok or virality or what are we doing digitally? And it was getting over, right? Because people couldn't go outside.
Right.
People couldn't go to shows, right? It was just the nature of how you market changed, right? And
would it have changed without COVID?
I don't know if it would have changed without COVID. I think it's all depending on...
That's a good question.
If tech... how technology would have influenced that change.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And
I mean, Zoom wasn't part of our life. Now it's part of every day of our life.
Zoom is everything.
Yeah. Correct.
So, and even to that point where before we would have to fly to see people.
Right.
To have meetings and certain things. Now we get on a Zoom, you know? Mm-hmm. So technology ultimately, I think, influenced how marketing has changed, right? And how artist marketing, artist development has changed.
Right.
But I think that we're seeing a bottoming out, if you will, because the people factor is important and has to get back to that.
Yeah.
And COVID expedited that technology.
COVID
change,
definitely expedited
right?
that, for sure.
We conversation after conversation, whether it be on this podcast, whether it be just on the side or whatever, the conversation comes around to we're not making new artists like we used to anymore.
Yeah.
You're not seeing new artists like that. Bottom line, you just don't see stars get created. What's wrong? What's broken? Is there something broken? Are we looking at a, you know, it's not music music industry overall, but hip hop, because that's what we're all a part of covering or being involved in. Is it broken or is it where it should be? How do you look at it?
I mean, the way I look at it is I think there has to be a return to the basics, right? And that's not an old school approach, right?
Right, not at all.
Because when you look at what artists are doing now, right, so much of it is disposable in a sense, where there's a microwave ability of, okay, I'm gonna put this out, I'm gonna put this on TikTok, I'm gonna see how many, you know, hits do I get, clicks, shares, etc. Right, but what's the connectivity to the artist, to the song, right? Where I feel like that's missing, even with technology, you can't short the artist development part of building an artist and creating a brand, right? Yeah. Like, to me, the artists that can actually, you know, break through, understand, okay, I need to have my digital footprint. I need to manage my socials, but I need to get on the road. I need to see people. Mm-hmm. I need to perfect my craft. I need to be able to perform. I need to consistently put music out to grow my craft because it's not about, oh, I'm gonna get one hit and I'm good, you know? And we, you know, in the SoundCloud era, we had some of those moments where, you know, things were streaming because of, you know, the virality of it. But that's, you know, not sustainable.
Is there someone now that you think has broken through that, a new artist that exemplifies that?
So who's doing that?
Yeah.
Who do I think that's doing that right now? That's a good question. I mean, I could tell you who I'm listening to, right? Where I feel like IDK, you know, is an artist that's doing that, that is committed to art, pushing art, creating incredible music, right? But also understands the diligence and the patience of, like, I'm going to be here.
Yeah.
Right? And not like, I need this overnight.
Overnight,
I need
correct.
This to hit right now.
He is that type of artist.
To me, I think Earl Sweatshirt is an incredible artist that, having seen Earl, now this goes back to when I was at Def Jam, but having seen Earl and his trajectory in terms of just the dedication, the commitment to the music. But now where he's going in terms of media and still doing shows, I think he's, you know, another great example. You know, again, I think that I'm a huge Tyler, the Creator fan, you know. Now, granted, Tyler's been around, but to me, it's the progression of how he's elevated his art, you know, while, you know, kind of maintaining, you know, authenticity.
All right, Def Jam to Warner.
Yeah, so I left Def Jam in 2017, went to Warner 2017. And at that time, you know, Warner, it was Warner Brothers before it became Warner Records. Warner has always been a historic label, right? And Warner has always been synonymous for, you know, legendary pop, rock acts. And, of course, they've had huge, you know, hip-hop and urban acts at the same time. But at that time when I went, there was a goal of kind of revitalizing the Warner Brothers brand for more frontline, you know, urban talent as well as pop and rock. So I was part of the executive team that was brought in to be a part of that, you know, change, if you will.
Gotcha. And during that tenure, who were some of the artists that you guys ushered in?
Yeah, during that time at Warner, we had Sweetie, Wale, NLE Choppa, Shorty,
Gibbs,
about to say Freddie Gibbs. And then, you know, there's several other, Wife and Lucci, again, several others where coming from Def Jam and, you know, my trainings and learnings from Def Jam and applying that to Warner, you know, it worked, right? Where, you know, you see Sweetie is, you know, still a relevant name and moving, and Wale, while no longer on Warner, Wale, of course, he was already Wale.
100% you know, already.
He was already Wale. He was already Wale.
You know, but, you know, we were able to get a huge, you know, hit, you know, with Wale and On Chill and Shorty, who was a new artist, you know, having a double platinum hit with Betua and, you know, a few others. So, again, just kind of bringing in the cultural nuances on the urban side, the artist relations, the artist development, and just kind of knowing how to, you know, market and move talent was why, you know, I was brought to Warner and, you know, part of bringing in a new executive team to do that as well.
And how long was that?
I was at Warner up until April 2023.
Okay.
So about a year. Well, you know, what, 5 years.
Five and a half years.
So, but since I've been out of there about a year now.
And so let's talk about what's on your chest right now.
Fat Beats. You know, Fat Beats, another legendary brand.
Absolutely.
Which, coincidentally, Fat Beats is celebrating the 30th anniversary of the brand.
Wow.
Started in 1994 by Joe Aberjohn, DJ Jab, which, you know, to me, going to Fat Beats was almost like a full circle homecoming moment. Right?
Nice.
Because when I was at Tommy Boy and started at
Tommy
Boy.
I was going to say there's a full circle effect of landing back at the
legacy. I was always in Fat Beats.
Yeah.
I shopped at Fat Beats. We did in stores. Yeah. I brought artists through Fat Beats.
Wow.
So the opportunity to work at Fat Beats, again, it was just like it was a real full 60 moment.
Absolutely.
And it was something I was very excited about because it's a brand that I revered, respect, and it's an opportunity to actually work with veteran and legacy artists, but then also new artists, you know, and move the brand and the business forward, right? Because I feel like, you know, within hip hop, you know, our guys and gals, let me not, you know, but our, you know, you get to a certain age and people feel like you're out to pasture, you know? And
yes and no, because I do think people like a Jay-Z have defined the odds of...
Yeah, but not everybody's Jay-Z.
Correct, but you're able to see that you can be 50 and above and still in hip-hop and still be relevant and still be cool.
Exactly, you know? And but that's, for me, that's why being at Fat Beats and being able to, you know, be part of a brand and a company that can provide, you know, distribution and marketing for other artists that are creating great records that, need a home
yeah.
to put them out and support them.
I think it's also, as you get older, understanding that the music not necessarily is always for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, like, yeah. the audience is young, hip-hop skews young, that 17, 18, 20, 22-year-old, however, is making music is not really making music for you.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. But then... that you know what to do with it, yep. even though mm-hmm. it's not for you. When you were younger, the music was a little bit for you.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
So that has to have you change in mm-hmm. the same thing as yep. how do you grow gracefully with that. And, you know, we spoke to Stout about that and said, I want to understand a certain thing, but then I see them at the gym listening to it and I get it and I try to see why do they like it.
Yes. Yeah,
and I think that's where you see the longevity of people in the game mm-hmm. is understanding there's a selfless side to it, you know?
Yep, agreed. But that's also the point of why I feel like hip-hop is always going to be around,
mm-hmm. right?
Because hip-hop is really reflective of the people.
Mm-hmm.
And to your point, where you have so many different aspects of hip-hop, you know, whether it's young, old, whatever.
And at 50 years, you can grow older with
it. And you can grow older with it, you know what I mean? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And in growing older with it, having an outlet for where there's music and opportunity to support that versus music and opportunity to support, whether it's, you know, youth or younger artists, it's a playing field for everybody.
Right. I think we forget that older people still listen to hip hop. They might not consume the news of it every day.
But they still listen to
it. And the gossip of it every day like a younger audience is, but they still consume it.
That's right.
And maybe they consume what they're used to and happy with, you know, and all of that and are growing old with it.
Yeah.
But they're still there. So you see an LL Cool J album be able to come out after all these years.
And do great.
And still have the fan base. Yeah.
Yep. Point exactly.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Because again, you think about it, right? Like my parents, their music was, you know, Teddy Pendergrass and Sly and the Family Stone.
Yeah.
And but I'm a parent, right?
Yeah.
But my music is LL Cool J mm-hmm. and Pete Rock and mm-hmm. Common, mm-hmm. you know, or MC Light.
Mm-hmm.
It's all relative.
Correct.
Like, you know, so, I mean, I still love hip hop. I listen to everything, but, like, you know, I like the flexibility of having options.
Yeah.
And with the age of hip hop, I think one of the kind of beautiful sides has been to see you being able to share that with your kids, right? So, now sharing the same genre.
Yep.
That your parents didn't share Sly and the Family Stone with you, but that having that you're now a genre that's been around long enough for we see the people in it or who loved it to share it with their kids and then see the rappers.
Yep.
You know, more and more rappers will talk to you, say, well, my kid put me on to stuff. You know, it's just a different change in time, you know?
Yeah.
Marketing. I don't know what that means. Talk to me like I mean, you know, I do know what it means, but I really don't know on a day-to-day what somebody like you does. And I don't see that disrespectfully. Marketing is kind of a very blanket statement.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you walk us through what exactly, how do you look at things? What's the lens of your approaching? Because when you do something long enough, that's how you look at it in every way, right?
Yeah.
You know, how do I fix that PR problem? Mm-hmm. How do I do whatever or anything? So how can you break down what marketing is to you and how it plays a role in your life?
Well, I mean, marketing to me is all things relative to how an artist or a brand is actually looking to expose themselves to the masses, right? And, you know, my first point with any artist I work with or any brand, but I'm going to speak specifically on the artist side, is what's that artist about? Who do they want to speak to? Who's their audience? How do they want to represent themselves? Like, what are the things about them and their music, right, that they want to put into the world? And then in first understanding that, then understanding, okay, well, where does that audience live?
Right.
What, you know, does that audience like? How does that artist's music fit into that audience's lifestyle?
And you're getting that from studying the artist that's presented
Absolutely.
To you or but from the artist?
Both.
Okay.
Right? To me, some of the best artists that I've worked with have had a vision for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we keep hearing.
They have an understanding for themselves and how they want to portray themselves and put themselves out there. And then it's my job to enhance that, add on to it, and execute it. Right? Because you can have great ideas, and we all have great ideas, but if you can't execute it, it doesn't matter, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's all of those things, right? And, you know, I look at marketing and everything, right? Because it's all relative to how you're pushing your brand or your product or yourself forward. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think fortunately, you know, we have certain metrics that we can actually use to read things a lot quicker.
Right. Everything's quantifiable.
And everything is quantifiable. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's taking advantage of all those things.
Mm-hmm. Got it. What if you don't believe in the artist?
What if I don't? But see,
good question.
That's a great question, right? But that's where you have to remove the personal aspect of it, right? Because it may not be for me, but it's for someone, right?
Because it got that far to begin with.
Because it got that far to begin with. And there's definitely been records that, okay, I didn't personally connect to this, but they were huge. And that's where it's the removal of self in terms of, you know, like, oh, well, I can't rock with that. But there's millions of other people that do.
And then the learning of why they do.
Exactly. Yeah. And the learning of why they do. The best marketers can do that. Right? Because if you know, you actually only look and try to market things that you like, you might not be working anything, you know, or you might not, you know, be involved in anything. So you have to, in a sense, remove some of your own personal aspect of it. But, you know, fortunately, I've worked with a lot of great artists and brands that I've been able to have a connection to and I've been able to support. And that's part of the personal aspect that really drives me and motivates me. But definitely having an understanding of, you know, kind of separating.
So we've seen a lot of changes in the industry lately.
Yep.
A lot of the major label situations. It's, you know, you guys play a different role from working in them. I've been watching and working them for a while, and it's scary. You know, you know things are going to change and end up in a certain place at some point. But what's your take on all of the changes we've seen this year? You stepped out last year and moved out of the major space last year, and a lot of the changes have been this year. But I'm sure you saw stuff coming.
Yeah.
And then how is it to watch what's happening now? Which, I mean, everything goes through changes, but this has been just stuff, some of the larger changes we've seen.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like the business is in a period of reset. And fortunately, I've had a long career, right? So I have certain things to reference, right? And this kind of reminds me of the Napster period, where I worked through that period, which was, what, 2000, 2001, give or take.
Around,
and the business, while circumstances are a little different, the business was in a huge downturn, right? Because Napster and file sharing, labels didn't know how to deal with it. They didn't know how to handle it, right? So there was layoffs, there was downsizing, you have physical retail accounts closing, right? So it was a dramatic shift for the business, right? Which I feel like we're in that period now where, while the circumstances are different, labels are forced to reset. Reset in terms of which aspects of the business are working, which aspects, and when I say aspects, meaning functionality in terms of services, whether that's marketing, radio, promo, you know, which...
What's the value of radio?
What's the value,
which
way, which, again, not saying it's going away or it has no value, but there's a re-evaluation of it, right? Technology, how technology is going to continue to infuse, you know, within labels, right? But then also with the streaming bubble, right? Given that streaming, and some of this is just based on the evolution of streaming, was able to add revenue back and volume back. But even that is kind of flatlining to a certain degree.
But what that means, people, I don't understand what that means. And I've heard that people aren't streaming anymore. They're just not listening to music. I mean, we see sales lower than they've been.
Yes.
Does that mean less people are just listening to music overall? What does the lower sales reflect? Because it's, I guess, what's it called? Sales are a combination of hard copy, amount of streams, all of that together. But those numbers are lower than they've been in a long time. We keep seeing numbers coming in at 20,000, 30,000, you know, 10,000, so and so. Why are the numbers, I don't know if you can answer this, but why are the numbers so low? Why is streaming down? Is that literally because people aren't pressing play, you know, or whatever on Spotify? I don't get
that part. I think streaming is down due to volume. There's a lot more artists. There's a lot more music.
So they're spreading out
there's
what they're listening to.
There's a lot more content, you know, that's actually being released. You know, like, there's this ridiculous number of how many new records that are uploaded to Spotify daily, which I think it's like, and I don't want to misquote, but it's like in the tens of thousands daily. So when you look at the amount of volume and the music that's being put out there and the content, people are still streaming. But they have more options. So whereas I might have just streamed this album 100 times, I'm streaming it 10 times because I'm going to this album.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to that album. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So it's all relative to the volume, you know? And because of that, I think that that is where the reset has to happen in terms of where are people's streaming habits based on volume? Where are people looking to consume and how in different ways? Whether now that we're back outside, and we've been outside for a while, but you have physical shows, you have D2C and merch, you have vinyl. People are, you know, experiencing their music, you know, in different ways. So I think that's where the reset is coming into play.
So one question about the reset, I don't know if this is going to make sense. I just keep going over it in my head. You go back to that 2000 time.
Mm-hmm.
In my recollection, hip hop was still over here, right? You didn't have Louis Vuitton doing fashion shows with it. You didn't have major labels or as many people accepting it. You didn't have it being played at the soundtrack of every TV show or all that kind of stuff. Now fast forward 20 years and hip hop is pop culture, mainstream, mm-hmm. not an over here thing.
Mm-hmm.
So if you do a reset, you know, kind of the cat's out of the bag. Hip hop's not new anymore.
Mm-hmm.
How do you reset and take it back for something that's already been so overexposed, that every brand has come in and endorsed a rapper? You know, there's a time period where so-and-so wasn't the face of this.
Yeah.
And so now you've reached that point where hip-hop's kind of infiltrated every aspect of everything.
Mm-hmm.
How do you put the cat back in the bag in order to get it to that place where you're getting that interest again? Because I think part of it is the interest was the fascination of hip-hop kind of being over there. And now it's over here and part of the party. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
That's what I entertain in my head is, how do you make something that used to be this weird kind of thing that people would dip their toes into, then became part of everything,
mm-hmm.
being something over here that's that interesting factor again?
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, again, I think that's where the artist development and the grassroots of aspects of artists building their own business is going to come back into
mm-hmm.
play,
mm-hmm.
right? Because if I'm an artist, right, and there isn't necessarily an opportunity for me at a major label, I'm going to do it myself,
mm-hmm.
right? Because I can put out my records independently. I could go on the road, right? I can, you know, look for brand or sync opportunities for my music, right? So I think that that's going to require artists to look at themselves as a business again, right? And not necessarily, I want to get this deal so I can go to a major label and I'm set.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so also with the number of people that are no longer at these major labels,
right?
That's going to create opportunity,
mm-hmm.
right? Because cream is going to rise to the top, right? So the artists and the people that I think can understand and figure that out, like, I think that that's where part of that reset and shift will occur.
So we're seeing the value of independence for the artists, whatever the definition of independence is for them, but not the traditional way, and independence for the individuals who played a role in bringing the game to where it is being significant.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, like, you know, and I'll liken this to, you know, when I left Warner, right? I was independent and, you know, I had to, you know, my own company, which, you know, I've always had, but I had certain clients that I work with. And part of that was, I did it in a building. I can do it for myself,
mm-hmm.
right? And fortunately, I had great relationships. I had respect and credibility. So when I was able to reach out to certain partners to offer my services, they were receptive.
Right.
So I was able to work with Jeezy, who went independently, and he had an album that came out, right? And
a book and all that.
So mm-hmm. I was able to work with him. I was able to work with L.A. Reid and Usher on his project, you know, Common and Pete Rock. So again, there's opportunities out there, but my opportunity and my timing of actually being outside of a major label forced me to change my lens,
mm-hmm.
right? Change my view in terms of, I did all this within the company,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Working for someone else. Mm-hmm. I can do this for myself.
Right. I think a lot of people will be forced to make that decision.
Absolutely.
And they will come to that crossroad just by the state of where things are right now.
Yep.
And you're going to see a lot of people becoming entrepreneurs who necessarily didn't expect to become an entrepreneur,
yep.
you know, just by the way you know, the cards are dealt and how the game is going right now.
Absolutely. I mean, because let's be honest. Yeah. There's only so many buildings.
Yeah.
And there's only so many slots. Right. Right.
But what we know is there's a ton of artists based on.
But there's a ton of artists and there's a ton of great artists. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, that need the service, that need the credibility, that need the experience, you know what I mean? That need the hustle.
Yeah.
Which kind of goes full circle until then there's a value into finding someone who's been around in the game for a long time because of the relationships they've been able to build along the way.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So let's go to nostalgic moments. You said full circle moments from Warner to Fat Beats to Def Jam. Is there a moment in time that is etched in history that you were a part of, but you didn't know it was going to be, or you actually knew that this moment right here will forever be remembered?
Wow. I had a few of those moments, to be honest. Now, whether I knew they were moments.
Yeah.
Probably some of them not till after the fact, right?
Okay. But
De La Soul, Stakes is High. Huge moment. And again, like, for me, De La is like my favorite group of all time. So getting to work with them was like a dream come true. And that album, you know, particularly for them at that time, was monumental, right? Because that was almost like the comeback, if you will, right? They had huge albums, but that album punched through, right? And the artists that shined on that album, whether it's Common, Mos Def, like, it birthed, you know, a lot. That was a moment. Rick Ross, Deeper Than Rap album was a moment.
Wow.
Because that was the album that, you know, made him the Teflon Don. And we all know why. Right, but he shined through and got bigger, and is, you know, still as relevant as ever.
100%,
even in his tenure right now. You know, Kanye West, My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy.
Wow,
which, you know, say what you want, Kanye's a genius. You know, but that album, to me, and this is my opinion, was like magnum opus. You know, in terms of just the production, the art, the runaway film, you know.
I think that's a big consensus for most people, the other power of that project.
Like, even talking about it, I get chills, because it birthed a whole another movement.
Wow.
Now, being at a label and you're working on that project and it hasn't been released yet, do you guys know that internally? Do you have that feeling and you're waiting for something to come out?
Yeah. You like, you feel it, because that's part of the excitement. You know, you see it, like, you know, there was, we connected to it, you know, there was an energy about it, you know, so I feel, I'm not going to speak for everyone, I felt it, you know what I mean? Because I saw, like, the art, and I was at the videos, and I just, you feel it, you see the energy.
You saw the ballet dancers.
You know, you see the energy and the excitement around it, you know? That was an incredible moment, you know?
Yeah, you do have
you had a starstruck moment?
Have I had a starstruck moment? Damn. I definitely have. I just have to. I've been in a room with so many artists and people. I gotta think about, like, who that would be, you know?
You can text us later.
Yeah, I'm going to have to text you that one.
We'll put it in the intro.
I'm going to have to text you that one later.
Anything else you want to add?
I guess, you know, the only thing I would add is, like, you know, for anybody that's watching this, you know, I think we're going through crazy times, right? Not just in the industry, but in the world, right? And to me, right, I feel like I've had longevity in this game. Because I've always tried to have a purpose, right? And I think that is what kind of helps me continue to stay motivated when there's crazy times, there's dark times, there's a lot of distractions, you know? So I guess my parting words, right, would be.
So your parting words, but I just thought of another question.
Oh, so. All right, so I'll pull that back. But I think I would just, you know, I would just tell anyone, you know, be purposeful and have intent, you know, and also patience, particularly for this generation.
Right.
Because, you know, I've led teams of people, and towards the recent years, I've noticed less patience with the younger generation in terms of like, oh, I want this now. But
them having less patience.
Yeah. I put in 25 years. You know what I'm saying?
Correct. But also look at the things that are at their disposal right now. You know, the internet.
Yeah.
You know, and they can do it themselves.
They can do it themselves.
And so they want that fast trajectory. But look even, how we're receiving this music that's coming out now.
But even that, you got to have a purpose and a plan.
Correct.
Because if you only want to be in it for a couple years, all right, cool. Knock yourself out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But, you know, I've been blessed to be in this for 25 plus years. Shit, maybe even 30 years at this point.
It's more than 25 years. Okay, you're doing it 25, 30 years. You come from Tommy Boy. It's De La Soul. It's Common back then. It's all of those artists that you mentioned that you're a fan of. You then fast forward now. These are crazy times of everything that we're going through. Where is that voice of hip-hop in those crazy times? You know, I mean, we're dealing with one of the most political elections in our history and important elections. You know, you used to have a bit more of a voice of from hip hop coming from more of a political space.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of was built off of that in a lot of ways. If you don't want to take Candace Owens' comments serious, you know, whatever that was. But so where is that? Someone who's seen it for 30 years and been involved in it, where did the voice of talking about things with a certain level of importance go? And does that come back? Or what are your thoughts on the fact that there aren't political songs? There isn't a fight for whatever it is. We've got a lot of people chasing the Trump chain down that are rappers, which can be surprising, not to get too into politics. But
I mean, I think that that's about self-choice, right? And while we had experienced artists that were about that, the culture isn't there now, right? And that's okay. So that's where it's going to come down to the individual choice. And if an artist chooses to do that, that's their choice. But I don't think that's for hip hop to do that. I think that's for the individuals.
Gotcha.
So
okay. So, thank you for your time.
Thank
you. Go vote, everybody.
Thank
you for joining us with Chris and Courtney for this episode of XXL's Inside Track.